As we watch the remarkable spectacle of the American political religious right embrace this presidential administration, and the administration embrace that movement right back, it's particularly jarring to think back to just a year or two ago, when it seemed that diversity, pluralism, and mutual respect were not just taking root, but flowering in this country. Yes, indeed. Elections surely do have consequences. But if we look further back still, this love affair between religion and business, between dogma and power, is clearly nothing new in our country. Whether that means optimistically that we're just witnessing another pendulum swing, or pessimistically that we'll never outgrow this unholy alliance, is for now purely speculation. But an expert on this history is Professor Kevin M. Cruz, who spoke with us in 2015 about this insightful book, One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America.
I think the broad strokes would be, one, many of the things that we take for granted when we think about America as being either a Christian nation or just a religious nation in general are, in fact, a fairly recent creation. They don't come to us from the founders. They come from perhaps the generation of our grandparents or our parents. So things like phrases like One Nation Under God or In God We Trust, traditions like the National Day of Prayer or the National Prayer Breakfast and so on. A lot of the religious slogans and ceremonies that inflect our national politics and our government, these are creations of really the 1950s. And the second takeaway point I would like to make would be that the story that I had traditionally heard about when these things had been created was one that really put them in the framework of the Cold War, that America, in the midst of fighting the godless communists of the Soviet Union, that was when and why we embraced all these religious slogans in our national politics. What I found in the book is that the story actually goes back a little bit further, and it's really, if we're looking at the motivation of the men in the movement who created these trappings of religious nationalism, they were really concerned not about foreign politics in the 1950s, but domestic politics of the 1930s. They were worried not about the Soviet Union, they were fighting the New Deal.
There are other, obviously, seminal turning points in this history that you have written. Would you highlight two or three of the others?
Maybe one before and one after Eisenhower, because Eisenhower really just kind of the pivot point of this story. Before him, I tell a story about the ways in which a group of conservative businessmen and sympathetic clergymen advance a language of what they call freedom under God. This is really the origin of a lot of the language that takes root in the 50s. But they do so under an ideology of Christian libertarianism. And again, they're targeting the New Deal. So this movement really peaks, and it's got ministers. Your listeners have surely heard of them, from Billy Graham, Abraham Verde, but also James Fifield, a Congregationalist minister from L.A. And they all work to advance this new sort of religious language that targets the New Deal. And a story I like in the book, this freedom under God ideology, peaks again the year before Eisenhower is elected with a series of 4th of July ceremonies around this theme. And there's a massive coast-to-coast campaign. They've got ministers competing in sermon contests. They have a national radio program organized by Cecil B. DeMille with Jimmy Stewart as the master of ceremonies, and Lionel Barrymore and Gloria Swanson give speeches. So it's this major national event where they get this language out to the public. And a later one, maybe this, I'm drawn to the way in which Nixon tries to follow Eisenhower's example. Eisenhower was very successful at using this religious language, again, I think, to bring Americans together. Nixon is clumsier with it. He uses it to advance his own agenda. So he holds church services inside the White House, with Billy Graham leading several of them, but other hand-picked ministers and hand-picked congregations there to hear them. And also he uses Graham to soften criticism of his war in Vietnam, both through a giant rally at the University of Tennessee after the invasion of Cambodia, and then a massive, to come full circle, a massive 4th of July ceremony in 1970 called Honor America Day, which is, again, it's a rally for the silent majority. So in Nixon's hands, this language of One Nation Under God that had brought people together in the 50s, only winds up driving them apart, because he makes this language something that it becomes an identifier solely of the right. And so conservatives rally around it in support of the war, in support of the silent majority, and liberals recoil from it. They retreat from this language that once brought them together.
Kevin, was there a particularly deceptive moment in this history that we should know about?
I think you can look back to that Freedom Under God campaign in 1951, because it gets set up as we're just trying to breathe a religious emphasis back into the celebration of the 4th of July. Let's remember that religious principles were part of us from the founding, and let's celebrate that. That's how they pitched it. Behind the scenes, though, they're very clear that this language is not to celebrate the American past, but rather the change of the American future. In fact, their ads make this very clear. Their ads run by these utility companies that support this, utility companies that have been fighting the New Deal for more than a decade. And they say, you know, well, let's make a Declaration of Independence now, in 1951. Declare your independence from the federal government. Declare that the government owes you no security, owes you no survival. You should be independent from that.
What motivated this campaign?
The idea that America is a Christian nation is one that goes back to just after the founding generation. So it's sort of been around for a while. This particular application, though, this invocation of that language of freedom under God, is one that's used to discredit the New Deal. That's their goal. And they had come to this religious language because their first try at rolling back the New Deal had failed horribly. So big business in the early days of the 1930s is publicly discredited. They're blamed for the Great Crash. The New Deal has started, and with it, it is regulating their businesses strongly for the first time. Most problematically for them, it has empowered labor unions really for the first time. So these businesses are catching it from above, from the government, and below, from their own work. Both are kind of pushing back against their authority. So they launch these economic arguments about the merits of free enterprise, and they pour millions of dollars into this. The National Association of Manufacturers, for instance, increases its PR budget 22 times over between 1934 and 1937. They are pouring money at this. The problem is no one's listening.
Do you see the religious right, whether or not they're aware of it, using some of the same techniques that were used in the historical period that you wrote about?
I think to some extent, yes. This general sense of an invention of a religious founding, I think it's still alive and well. That's something that the people I talk about in the book try to communicate, this constant move to recruit the founders behind this idea that America is a religious nation. It takes a bit of imagination, I think. I think if you look at what the founding generation said, they're quite clear on this. So these people, much like the religious right today, they often go back to the Declaration of Independence, its invocation of nature's God, or the rights come from our creator. They tend to ignore the Constitution, which purposely keeps religion and the state at arm's length from one another.
From 2015, that's Dr. Kevin M. Cruz discussing his book, One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America. A professor of history at Princeton, Dr. Cruz is currently completing a new book, Divided We Stand, America Since the 1970s, and is working on a new project, tentatively titled The Division, John Doerr, the Justice Department, and the Civil Rights Movement. We'll look forward to those releases.